don't be defined by what everybody else is doing, be defined by what you're doing. And I know that sounds a bit cheesy, but I actually genuinely think there's a lot to be said for that, because the legal profession, so often it is, have you made partner quicker than your peers? Have you, you know, are you, have you got that training contract? Have you done this? And really, it doesn't matter. And I do think your time will come one way or another. And if you work hard and take the opportunities when they present themselves, I think you'll find yourself where you want to be. If somebody had said to me at university, I would be doing what I do now in the model that I'm working in now, along with my other roles, I'd have just said, no, I can't believe that I would do that.
What makes an industry-leading lawyer opt for a commercial practice area in the first place?
Is there such a thing as the right route to becoming a commercial lawyer?
And what advice do they have for aspiring commercial lawyers?
My name's Dwayne Cormell, founder of legal recruitment consultancy Realm Recruit and LegalJobCoach.com.
And I'm Rebecca Blundell, a specialist recruiter of commercial lawyers.
In this series of podcasts, we'll be chatting with prominent commercial lawyers about the wide range of commercial practice areas, their career journeys, their lives away from work, and all things law.
This is Refreshing Chats with Commercial Lawyers.
So this week, we have a real treat in store for you in what's a first for the Refreshing Chats. We're bringing you not just one, but two lawyers. First of all, we've Karen Bexley, someone I first met over 5 years ago. Karen co-founded Bexley Beaumont, a law firm based on the fee share model, early on in 2020. And she joined us alongside her colleague, Rebecca Peck, who was in the first wave of lawyers to join the Bexley Beaumont team. Whilst Karen's worked on a fee share basis for some years, Rebecca made the move having spent all of her career thus far in the more traditional surrounds of national and international practices. We caught up with the pair of them while still in lockdown 3.0. Okay, so the first question is always on me to ask. We would like to know, if you can act one refreshing new law, what would it be? And I'm mindful that this is the first time we've had two guests, so I don't know whether you've discussed this in advance and have one answer each, or whether you've got a shared answer, but yeah, I'll put it to you.
Well, we did actually discuss it, but we had our own answers. So my answer was around doing more to support working parents, but not from the employer's side. So I would enact something that made the summer holidays a little bit shorter and the other holidays a little bit longer. I think that would benefit the children, because they all are already at breaking point by normal holidays, and mean that more people go abroad and employers and employees could sort of manage their time a bit better. So that would be what I'd like. Thinking randomly, it's all about holidays at the moment with COVID where we are.
And what about you, Rebecca? What would you say?
Yeah, so mine was a little bit more lighthearted, really, rather than getting into the nuts and bolts of something truly legal. But I think I would enact something that meant that people couldn't get you onto a Zoom call or a Teams call at short notice. I'm just in my pajamas. So I think I would enact a law that was not allowed.
I would definitely back that one if I had the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, it's interesting that 12 months ago, that wouldn't even be, you know, a contemplation, would it? I don't think any of us had properly used Zoom and Teams before the last 12 months. So no, that's a good one. I want to kick us off, Karen. This is probably directed at you, really, just to talk about Bexley Beaumont. Yeah. And, you know, how the idea to set that up came about.
Yeah, so it really genuinely a meeting of minds of Anna and me. So we launched obviously January 2020. I had previously been a fee share consultant for a number of years, and I got to the position where I was looking at what next and where, and sort of finding myself lacking. And not that there was anything wrong with all the options available, but just none of the options available were what suited me and where I wanted to work and how I wanted to work at the moment. Anna obviously was previously chief exec of a large law firm, and again she wanted to look at something different, so came from a meeting of mine of her desire to do something innovative, and me, pure bluntly, there was nowhere I wanted to work. And that's kind of how the vision sort of came about, really. And what we obviously, the vision is something different we're creating something different in the marketplace, but just to offer an alternative for both clients and lawyers. We talk about clients and lawyers' interests aligned, and that's a big part of what we are, what we do. Our lawyers have control of how they work. And at the heart of it, it's a law firm full of quality lawyers with good clients and a team. We are very much focused on our team. And I think sometimes that's quite difficult as firms get bigger. No aspirations to be the biggest. We want to keep that team spirit alive and keep the lawyers working together in a very collaborative way and keep that quality across the team. So cross referrals and client opportunities, and all clients know they're in safe hands across the team.
How many lawyers have you got now, Karen?
19 as we sit here today. We've got another one joining us in 2 weeks' time with his own team. And we've got another couple on notice periods.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I mean, you're obviously doing something right, because to start, what, just over a year ago, just as a pandemic hit, 3 months in, and to hit the numbers you're at, that's...
Yeah, I think that's it. The vision is, you know, we are unwavering in our vision, but at the same time, you know what we are and what we're creating. And I think that desire, we're not doing much differently than we would have done in spite of the pandemic, but it has allowed people time to think and question what do they want at the next stage of their career. And so that desire for something different is clearly out there.
Rebecca, you can maybe, I suppose, shed some more light on that, because you joined having previously been at relatively more traditional firms. And I say relatively because I know the firm that you joined immediately from are perhaps not, you know, the most traditional. They're an ABS, but nonetheless, I suppose Bexley Beaumont is quite a different proposition to anything that's come before in your career. So what was it that attracted you to the idea?
So I'd sort of been thinking about moving on from my previous role, probably from sort of the back end of 2019. But I didn't want to go back to a large national. I'd enjoyed my time when I'd been in that kind of model, but sort of didn't want to step back into what I'd left. Didn't really want to go in-house. Something I love about my role is that I've got a variety of clients, and I think particularly in employment law, clients, you can present them with the same set of facts, but because you're talking about people and culture, one client will do something very differently. So I didn't want to go in-house where you're acting for the same client all the time. So then I was sort of looking at other options, and I really wanted something that would work for me and that would enable me to take a bit more control over who I acted for, when I worked, how I worked, those kind of things. So met initially with Karen, actually, and almost straight away I just thought I liked the idea of the model, and I'd looked into fee share models in the past, but it hadn't felt quite right. But probably more importantly, I liked Karen and Anna, and I liked what they were about. You just kind of get that feeling, and I thought, I think this is the right business for me at the right time. And then you sort of step away and you mull it over. It's quite a big jump to come out of the sort of more traditional employed setup, but just felt like the right time and the right opportunity. And funnily enough, Karen and I were just saying it was actually almost exactly a year ago that I met with Karen. So that was my last trip into Manchester City Centre, was to meet with Karen, because it was right at the beginning just as we were turning a lockdown. So the children were still at school the day after the school shut. And a lot's happened in 12 months for everybody, I think.
I think Rebecca was my last meeting pre-lockdown.
It's a year to today, actually, that we closed our office. I think, you know, it's coming up for that kind of first anniversary for a lot of things for people. Yeah. Did that weigh on your thoughts, Rebecca, after like committing to this decision and then the world falling apart?
Well, so I'd met with Karen, but I didn't make the decision straight away.
Okay.
And I think the pandemic, it cuts both ways, really, because in some respects, it perhaps slowed down my decision making, because everything was so uncertain. You're in this time when it's hard to make decisions with clarity. Certainly at the beginning of lockdown, I think everybody felt so uncertain and worried and all those different feelings. So on the one hand, it sort of possibly slowed down my decision-making process. But on the other hand, I think lockdown really helped me to make that decision more quickly, because a lot of the advantages of being in a traditional employed model fell away quite quickly. So, for example, having a short commute to the office, having the safety net of being employed and knowing you're going to get your monthly pay each month, well, those things fell away because businesses were unilaterally making pay cuts, businesses were shutting, you weren't in the office. You know, that known quantity of liking your team and your colleagues, well, that all fell away. I hadn't seen my colleagues face to face. So I think it worked both ways, really. I think it made me pause and think about things in some ways, but in other ways it made me think, well, the world's so uncertain, why not take this leap of faith and do something a bit different and go with my gut? So I'm pleased that I did.
Refreshing Chats with Commercial Lawyers is supported by Realm Recruit. Realm was founded in 2015 to offer something different in response to the scattergun approach of some recruiters. Realm believe in treating lawyers like people, not candidates, and law firms like valued partners, not just transactional customers. Each of Realm's recruitment consultants are ultra specialists. Their refreshingly niche approach gives them the perfect platform to help lawyers develop their careers and to assist law firms grow sustainably. Whether you're a hiring manager looking for talented legal personnel or a lawyer looking for an exciting new challenge, Realm are ready to help you. Visit realmrecruit.com for more information.
You said as well that obviously it was a big decision for you moving away from the traditional law firm and having that seeming security behind you. And I think that's something that a lot of people, you know, when you speak to them about fee share models, the first thing, you know, people raise concerns about the stability and being able to support yourself and generate enough income from your own clients. What would you say to people who are contemplating it and have that as their kind of number one barrier that stops them going forward?
I think I would say, well, Karen and Anna both said this to me because I think I'd identified that was a barrier for myself personally, but I'd say back yourself, absolutely back yourself. And also, I actually think that it can seem like a risk, but what's fantastic is it's your risk and you can take ownership of that risk. So absolutely, there is that risk that your clients aren't going to come with you or you're not going to generate new work, but it's all within your control. It's you've got that gift to be able to manage it yourself. And to me, that's what I would say is just try it. What's the worst that can happen? And actually, if you're good at your job and you've got good relationships and a good network, the work will follow. And then what's great is then you're in control of that rather than somebody else telling you when you're going to get a promotion or when you're going to get to work for a particular client. You've got a lot more of that control. So, but back yourself, or do you think that?
I became a fee share consultant 10 years ago, nearly. Well, yeah, about 10 years ago. And Rebecca and I remember having a conversation quite early on, maybe about 3 or 4 months in, and we sort of reflected, one of the words I use is empowerment. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, once you've done it, and Rebecca, it's not in your head that you can't see, but that's the conversation we had that actually it sort of resonated with her then, that actually once you've done it, you nearly never look back, because actually it gives you that empowerment and control over your career that, you know, so much of what people think is comfort and security actually isn't. Actually, it is that sort of empowerment over your career that actually you get to choose who, what, why, when, and, you know, and it's a catalyst. Had I not done that 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't own Bexley Beaumont now. So, you know, it's a catalyst for lots of things along the way.
I've seen some research of late that says that within 5 years' time, the consultant fee share model is going to be the dominant model amongst high street and mid-market law firms. And I think about a third of lawyers, the research predicts, is going to be working under such model. Is that because this safety net that the traditional model apparently offers isn't actually a safety net? Kind of what you were just saying there, Karen, or is there more to it than just that?
I think, you know, generally, to be a lawyer, you're fairly hungry, ambitious at the start of your career or at some point in life. And that's more so. And I think that people, it's a very fair and ethical way of working. And it resonates, that fair and ethical way of working. Now, we say that actually, if people are choosing us, they're normally choosing between us and a traditional. And actually, we've almost gone back to the traditionals of 20 years ago. Well, many of the lawyers don't even remember, where in every city there were these fantastic law firms of people working together with a common goal. And I don't think you were as aware. I mean, it still existed, but you weren't as aware then. I mean, I was fairly young 20 years ago, but you know, you weren't as aware then of this sort of model of larger and larger law firms taking over. Not everyone, you know, that suits some people, suits different people at different stages of their career. But again, I think people are looking for difference and something that's fair and ethical and allows them to achieve their own ambitions rather than the ambitions of an equity partner or, you know, shareholder. So I think it's partly, you know, all industries are having to adapt for the generations coming through, and people looking at, you know, the millennials coming through and the other generations. And as Rebecca and I know, because we're employment lawyers, I think it's more that people are questioning their career more. You know, they're questioning what choices they're making, and they want those choices. And the traditional one size fits all that law was stuck in for so long is changing. And historically, the difference is with the type of law we practice, whereas now I think it's how you practice and where you practice is becoming more prevalent. I've never, as I say, I've never looked back, so it's quite hard for me to see, but I do believe that, you know, we're not suited for everyone, and that's great. All we want is choice for clients and lawyers, you know, that's fine. You know, we are suited for a lot of people, and as the survey shows, ever increasing numbers of people. That's my view.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I just think the world of work is changing, not just in the legal sector, and people are more wanting, you know, portfolio careers, and they want flexibility. And I just think it's different. I don't think it's that, you know, I think back to being at uni and, you know, amongst my peer group, it was all about getting a training contract with one of the big nationals. That's what everybody seemed to want to do. And that was seen to be, that means you're there and you're successful. But there's so many different routes into law now. And I see that with my peer group from university in terms of the way our legal paths have all gone. Have been wildly different, but we're all in places where we've found what's right for us. So I can see there being more of a shift towards this model. I still think there will be a place for the big nationals, you know, and I would never change the training that I had and, you know, the way that my career started. I would never undo that and the lessons I learned and the growth that provided me with. But I think it's that less you're there and then your career is just going that way. You've got different opportunities.
I'm so glad that you've made this point about at university, the Holy Grail was a training contract with one of the big nationals, if not the magic circle firms, because it's something that really weighed heavily on my mind as an undergraduate and I think got the better of me, actually. And I think it's not just the peer pressure from everybody else on the course, but actually I think it stems from the traditional legal career advice. It all felt like all you have to do is get a training contract and sponsorship for the LPC or otherwise forget about it. So with that in mind, I know that a lot of our listeners are at the kind of early stages of their careers. Could you maybe both share with us your story of how you got into the profession to help us dispel this myth that there's only one way to get to the point where you're both at now, and that I suppose is, you know, success and you're happy with your careers?
Yeah. I mean, I trained in a smaller firm, a much smaller firm. And again, I think that was, you know how to run a business and you know what goes on behind the scenes in a smaller firm. You know, when your financial partner's screaming around going, right off your whip, it's financial year end. You understand why. And you also get, you know, my experience having moved then to a bigger firm is a bit more of a baptism of fire. In the smaller firm, you were very much more aware from day one. And then I did go to the national, which again is a brilliant, you know, the training that you get with that, the opportunity, you know, as part of McDonald's pitch team and the training that went in that, there was four of us and acting for some, you know, 20,000 people, reorganizations, you know, there's the different work, but some of the work is the same, you know, it's just in a different environment. And I think, as Rebecca said, there's something to be said for part of that as part of your journey as well. But actually, it was the two together that then gave me the confidence to go and do fee share. Because I'd won the smaller clients and I'd acted for the bigger clients and I'd done everything in between the general counsels. And it was that variety in my career that actually then enabled me. And then to move on to that, become effectively a non-exec director and then own a law firm. I think, you know, you can be two, one thing or the other, you know, and I think actually that's part of the journey and there's lots to learn. And we've all got mentors and people we've learned lots from along the way. And so that's my journey, how I came to Bexley Beaumont. So I've done the smaller, I've done the national, international, actually, it became when I was there. And then a smaller then as a fee share, and then with Bexley Beaumont. And it's all those experiences that feed us in together that helps ultimately set up Bexley Beaumont to sort of combine that knowledge, really. And as you say, I was in, you know, Magic Circle was the Holy Grail where I was at Sheffield at the time. And then below that, and I didn't want to go to London, so that sort of ruled that out. I wish I had now, but at the time I didn't want to. And but just for a different experience, I've not worked in London. I've spent a lot of time in London, but not worked there. So I think it's that wherever you get your training contract, however you get there, they are all connections along the way and journeys along the way. But Rebecca, you're sort of the opposite to me, aren't you, really?
Yeah, I guess I probably did go the sort of the quite normal route in that I did a law degree and then I got my offer of a training contract after going on a vacation scheme, which I quickly accepted. And then, so I went sort of, well, I guess we've used the word quite a lot, but I did go down the traditional route. So I'd got my training contract with a big national. They sponsored me through the LPC. So I trained there and was there for 11 years. Probably the point at which I then thought I'm going to get off this treadmill and try something else was then when I moved to a smaller firm. So I went from a team of 80 employment lawyers nationally as part of a massive big international firm to a team that at the time when I joined was like 4 or 5 employment lawyers. So I actually went from that big firm to a smaller firm and suddenly had to do things like chase my own bills and didn't have a business development person allocated to the employment team and didn't have a professional support lawyer and all of those sort of things. So yeah, so I sort of took that quite brave decision, as was seen by my peers in the big national. My goodness, you're going to a firm and we haven't heard of this firm. What are you thinking of? And there is a lot of snobbery in law. And I think that's what I would say to anybody who's at an early stage in their career is don't be defined by what everybody else is doing. Be defined by what you're doing. And I know that sounds a bit cheesy, but I actually genuinely think there's a lot to be said for that, because the legal profession, so often it is, have you made partner quicker than your peers? Have you, you know, have you got that training contract? Have you done this? And really, it doesn't matter. And I do think your time will come one way or another. And if you work hard and take the opportunities when they present themselves, I think you'll find yourself where you want to be. If somebody had said to me at university, I would be doing what I do now in the model that I'm working in now, along with my other roles, I'd have just said, no, I can't believe that I would do that.
Refreshing Chats with Commercial Lawyers is supported by LegalJobCoach.com. With traditional legal career advice at university and law school often having an overemphasis on city and magic circle firms, LegalJobCoach.com tries to tell the other side of the story. It offers insight into what life is like on the high street and with specialist boutiques and at both regional and national firms. It's coaching on everything from CVs to interviews, advice on where to look for a job and where not to. It's a refreshing approach to legal career coaching. Visit LegalJobCoach.com to register for a free account.
I want to talk about women in the law and the representation of females as against males, particularly in the more senior positions. Obviously, the two of you break the mould in that regard. But I just wondered if there were any observations that you had on that. And I saw actually, Rebecca, you posted on LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago about when you first started your career, and there were certain firms that didn't allow women to wear trouser suits in the office, which is just crazy to think now. But obviously times have moved quite quickly.
I'm a few years older than Rebecca, and no firm would let you wear trousers, and you would never wear them to court. And even then, it took me a long time till I would wear them to court. A long time in my career. You know, it's always been 65% of the profession, even female, but never the same percentage at the top. And there's lots of reasons for that. Even in my career, and as I say, that bit older, I don't think it's ever been a conscious decision. It's just lots of obstacles along the way. I was trying to find the statistic the other day of how many of the big firms are still named after men. And it's top 50, top 100. It's really high. And that's a historic thing. That's historic. You know, the women, you go way back. My mum was a legal secretary for a while. She never thought of sitting the other side of the desk because women didn't. You know, so even though she used to do the job. So I think it is changing. You know, all firms are more aware of it. I think diversity across the piece, whether it be women or all diversity inclusion, needs to be recognised across our profession, across all areas. And I still, there is a practical issue of women are the ones who take maternity leave and give birth, and quite often professional women, that comes at a more difficult stage perhaps in their career in terms of where the trajectory of growth is. But we as a profession have to recognise that. And I was talking to someone who was much younger than me, who was saying, well, that's not anyone else's problem other than the profession's problem to resolve that, really, or, you know, make that not so it's not an issue. But I'd like to think it's slowly, it's definitely getting more representation. We do wish for the day when it's no longer news that there's, I can't remember which law firm it was, Magic Circle has their first female managing partner. That would lovely not to be news. That just is a given. The fact that we are two women setting up a law firm almost not to be news anymore. We're just two lawyers setting up a law firm, the same as everyone else, but we're not quite there yet. And the same across all diversity across the board, I think.
I mean, I agree. I agree in the sense that I think it's changing. I think that change is slow, but I think it will inevitably change as people, well, as those of us who, you know, started in the profession when it was probably even more heavily male dominated, as we're going up the ranks and we're becoming more senior, you know, I think that will redress the balance. And I think over time, the people in the more senior roles and the people that the more junior lawyers will be looking up to will be, I just think there'll be, it will be different. Because I do think back to when I was a trainee, your female partners weren't necessarily role models in the sense that you didn't necessarily, I remember thinking, I don't necessarily aspire to be like them because they never see their children. They have to behave in this very sort of aggressive way in meetings to have their voice heard. And I sort of remember thinking, well, I don't really want to be like that. I still think I should be able to have a voice and be successful and ambitious and be at the table without having to change my behaviours. And I think as people, as the generations come through, they'll see you don't just have to be a particular type of person to be successful in law. And I think that will open the doors, not just for women, but across the board.
Do you think this is a societal thing, then, by which I mean that the change within the profession comes gradually off the back of societal change, and therefore we are to some extent powerless around what we can do to fix the problem other than wait for societal change to continue? Or are there things that we can practically do to speed this up? Because as Rebecca says, the change has been admittedly pretty slow on this front, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both, to be honest, Wayne. I think change will happen through changes in society anyway, but I think then it is also incumbent on those of us in the profession to speak up about our experiences and to recognise the challenges that we've faced and ensure that those challenges aren't in place for those that follow us, and for the firms and the organisations themselves as well to put in the measures to try and redress the balance. I think it's a combination of things. I think if we just let society do its job, we'll continue on that sort of slow journey. I don't know what you think, Karen.
Yeah, I think it's very much on the agenda of all law firms, as I say, not just women. You know, it is diversity across the board at senior level, really. And I'd say there is a whole societal piece around it. You know, I remember when shared parental leave came in, so effectively, or, you know, the ability to share maternity leave, there is still a societal issue around that, that it's not being taken up. And that's sort of my employment lawyer hat on rather than in terms of this. But, and whether, again, the last year have changed that, will society have changed that? More people will be working from home, more people have been involved. We speak to many of the traditional male lawyers who have never even seen their, they don't see their children during the week and have. So actually, will this be a bit of an acceleration within societal change? Possibly. But as you say, it needs to come both ways, doesn't it? It needs to come from the top doing something about it, and then the push from the bottom. And I don't think we've really had the force of both at the same time over the last 20 years. I think there's been voices within it, but I don't think we've had the full D&I recognition across law firms and being on the agenda in such the same way as society, hopefully, on the back of the pandemic, might be pushing it at the same time. So we'll see whether it gives a bit of an acceleration change.
I think the role model point that you made, Rebecca, was a really interesting one, because that is what young lawyers are looking at. They're looking further up the ladder and seeing how things are. And if that's not someone they aspire to be, then maybe that's part of the reason for the drop-off that we've seen consistently. And maybe now there's better, for want of a better word, role models higher up. You know, people like the two of you, and they see that you can have a family life, you can work flexible hours, you know, work from home, and you can kind of have it all a little bit more than perhaps in the past. So maybe that will encourage more people to kind of stick with it and move up and aspire to be, you know, the people at the top rather than, you know, just stay in the middle.
I think what has changed as well is actually what having it all looks like. I often get into debates with my friends about this, is you can't have it all. No, you can have it all. And I think what we always come down to is actually it's about, what does having it all look like for you as an individual? And I think that has changed. I think it used to be, coming back to the training contract point, it used to be, if you'd done a law degree and you wanted to be a lawyer, your measure of success was getting your training contract. But success can take all different forms. And I think that's the same with having it all. I think as long as you know what your having it all looks like, it doesn't need to be the same as somebody else's. And I think people are just more open to seeing success in different ways. Yeah.
I could go on a feminist debate and I'm not going, but you know, the whole having it all, no one ever talks about men having it all.
Yeah.
And that's a societal change. That's it. You know, why can't a female be a lawyer as be as hungry, as ambitious and want a family and be the same as the male lawyer who's hungry, ambitious and wants the family? And I think that's where, as a society, we have to change this. Our lawyers, female lawyers, don't join our business because they want to work flexibly any more than our men join our business because they want to work flexibly. They are hungry, ambitious lawyers who effectively want to be entrepreneurs in their own right and do so within the Bexley Beaumont team and culture and environment of support. And the men want the control in the same way the women want the control. Now, yes, the control can help if one of you, whether it be the man or woman, has to pick up the children. But actually, you know, that it's more than that. And I think that's where we've almost got to change as a society, that this almost the glass ceiling. If you have children as a woman, then it's something different. And as Anna and Rebecca said, having all is different. There are still some women who want full-time nannies, or men who want full-time nannies, or men who want to, you know, that's the societal change, isn't it? And I think that's the conversation. My husband's never been asked about who's going to have, what's going to have impact on the children. He's a lawyer too. I have. That's a societal issue as much as a firm issue. And I think, you know, women just want to, like men, want to do something that, I work longer hours now than I ever have. Well, not never have, but for a long time. Well, not probably ever have, actually. But that's because I'm set up a law firm. But actually, I do so around my children because I'm passionate about this. I'm hungry. I've got a career. I went to the same law school as my husband did. You know what? We all went to degree together. We all joined this journey together, and what we all want, we should all be able to achieve, regardless of our sex and who physically gave birth. And I think that's the really societal change.
I don't think I'm qualified to make that point any better than you just have. So if it's okay, I'm going to move the conversation on. Suffice to say, I agree with everything you've all just said.
Yeah.
I'd like to know, Karen, it's one thing to keep a business going during a pandemic, but to set one up and to get it to the point that you've got it now, you must have hit a few challenges along the way. So could you talk us through some of those?
Well, the first practical challenge was just not seeing each other. You know, we spent so much time together every day in a kitchen and in our office and sharing, and by Anna and me, I mean, you know, how do you grow a business and bounce ideas off each other so early on when you're not actually physically able to see each other for months? So we teamed, and we do have a rule, Rebecca, regardless to your law, that we teamed each other regardless of what we look like. And we never call, we always teamed each other so we can see each other, which is the best we can get. And the other challenge, you know, the challenges other than that were the no distinction between work. But I don't think there ever is when you set up a business, to be honest. I think it is all consuming. And I think that's no difference. But the practical biggest challenge for us was doing this with four people in a house at all times each. And two of them in both cases under the age of 10, 11 at the time. All four of them, junior school age children or infant school age children. That was just the hardest bit of practically dealing with that.
A huge admiration for that. I set Realm up with no children running around my house that needed looking after and educating, and I found it difficult enough. So yeah, absolute credit to you.
Yeah. And it was, you know, we had to challenge ourselves and think, you know, does this make, you know, no, we keep going and, you know, hold your nerve. We had to hold our vision. You know, we got CVs all over the place in the first few months, people being made redundant. We turned them all down, most of them, because we were very fixed on our idea of quality and we had to stick with our vision. And the team, we had to almost ignore the noise of the pandemic and stick with our vision and challenge each other on that and challenge ourselves on that. And learn how to do everything by Zoom.
You must have met with a fair few partners, senior lawyers, over the course of the last 12 months while you've been interviewing and speaking to people about the possibility of joining Bexley Beaumont. Are there any common misconceptions that have formed a bit of a theme when you're speaking to people that come up time and time again?
That all fee-share law firms are the same. No one ever says that Clifford Chance is the same as a high street firm because they pay people the same. But because we pay people the same, people seem to think we're the same. And we're all very different. And that's great. Again, we're about different. And that's probably the most common misconception, that we do what Bexley Beaumont does and different law firms, in the same way culturally. And Becca mentioned before, we're all different cultures, we're all different firms, we're all different. And I think that's probably the most common. Or that we're totally distributed. Everyone sits at home in their bedroom and works on their, or in their office and works on their own. We're very much a team. As Rebecca knows, we did the team challenge, which she got the family on the weekend. You know, we work together as a team. Yes, we might be miles apart. We do have an office. People come in, but we have team meetings. We have something, a 5-week rolling program where every week something different is happening as a team. And I think that's the other misconception, that there won't be the support and there won't be the team environment. And there really is, which I think Rebecca can add to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing that is so great is actually how much I've been able to get to know my new colleagues, despite the fact that the majority of them I've never met face to face. And I think that's taken a lot of effort on Karen and Anna's part, but I think it's taken a lot of effort on everybody's part. But actually, if you put the effort in, it is absolutely achievable. And it does very much feel like, I don't feel like I'm sat at home working in silo just under the umbrella of a Bexley Beaumont name. When I speak to clients, when I speak to other peers in my network, when I'm speaking to my colleagues, I still feel part of a team. And that actually was really important to me, because otherwise I could have just gone off and done this on my own. You know, there's particularly in employment law, where I think the consultancy model is that there's lots of lawyers out there doing it on their own. Well, I could have just done it on my own, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be part of the firm. And don't get me wrong, I can't wait till we can all meet up face to face. But
we're all looking forward to it. It's going to be a big party.
Supporters of this podcast, Realm Recruit, are IMA affiliates. IMA is about identifying, modifying, and adapting your communication style in order to better connect with others on their wavelength. It's a gateway you move through in order to understand what a person wants, needs, and expects, and how they manage their emotions. Whilst more than just another online questionnaire, the IMA questionnaire is the starting point. Within just 2 minutes, you can gain valuable insight about yourself and be introduced to a simple yet powerful way of thinking about the way we connect with others. Visit realmrecruit-ima.com to take the questionnaire. I'd like to ask something a bit more abstract to you both, if that's okay. So, Rebecca, you can go first. If you weren't a lawyer right now, what would you be?
Oh, gosh. Do you know what? I don't know what I would be. What did I want to be as a kid? I wanted to be all sorts of things. I wanted to be a dancer at a time. I would have liked to have gone into musical theatre, but I can't sing.
I think that's a prerequisite.
I don't really know. I think I probably, in all honesty, I think I probably would have gone into some kind of business role. I do enjoy working with businesses and solving problems and sort of being with people. But I don't really know what I'd have done if I'd been a lawyer, which is a bit sad, isn't it?
What about you, Karen?
Part of already doing it, because I now, whilst I am still a lawyer and I still practice law, I help run a business and I really enjoy that. And I think I probably would have done that. I think it's psychology, quite obsessed with people and behaviour of people. I would quite like to have been a psychologist, I think, as well. Whatever I'd done, it would have been very people-based, which is probably why employment law found me. But yeah, I think I get the benefit of almost having a second career now, because I am a business owner and run a business. And I think sometimes in our profession, people think that they're the same thing as a lawyer, and it's not. It doesn't matter what I run now, I run a business. It just is law is at the heart of it. And so it's quite nice to have that as a second profession.
We've obviously been in lockdown now, off and on, for the best part of a year. I think we're all starting to go pretty stir crazy and trying to come up with new and exciting things to do on the weekend and in our spare time. Is there anything that either of you have started doing that would be considered a bit of a lockdown guilty pleasure?
We're eating a lot. Life seems to evolve around meal times. I mean, particularly lockdown one, that seemed to be the only thing that sort of structured the day was, oh, it must be lunchtime now. Oh, what are we going to have to eat? And the weekends are the same. It's like, oh, well, what meal should we have this weekend? And what should we cook? What should we bake? I say we, I don't do any cooking, but we as a family in the Royal Wing. but we do seem to just be, it seems like food and drink seem to be the things that, but I haven't learned any fancy new skill or picked up any kind of quirky craft habit or anything like that. I haven't had the time.
McDonald's delivery to house. That was, that's a definite guilty pleasure. That would have ever happened. And even worse, it's a McDonald's breakfast. That was a real guilty pleasure.
I'm envious. My postcode's such that I can't get that, and you're making me very jealous.
We've had that a few times. And I think I'm much more focused on takeaways than we've ever had before. But like Rebecca says, a lot of it's around treats, where you can get them, isn't it? It's all about that, isn't it? It's treats where you can get them, whether that be, I won't tell you some of the stuff my children have learned at the age of 8 to watch during lockdown one. That's a whole other conversation to get them through the days. But treats where you can get them, which often does revolve around food at the moment or takeaway. My eldest has started baking, which is nice. So she's got a new guilty pleasure, which I enjoy eating.
Let's go with our final question. We'd like to know, what's your favourite refreshment?
I think I even know Rebecca's. Go
on. I'm very predictable, but a glass of champagne that's my favourite. It's not necessarily what I have the most. And then I was thinking, actually, when you said about that question, I thought, I'd really love an Aperol spritz on a sunny beach somewhere. That would be a
I'm on board with that. I love an Aperol spritz.
Mine's the classic gin and tonic, which I've liked for a long time. But again, that at the moment, I think it's as much where you're drinking it as what you're drinking. And, overlooking the sea would be lovely, a nice, long, cool gin and tonic with a view of the sea. In North Wales, it'd be lovely, even if you don't get bored.
Hopefully not too long, and we'll be able to get to Abersoch and do just that.
Yeah, Anglesey in my case, but yes.
Okay.
But yeah.
Each to their own, Karen. So I think the place we have to start is by talking about the fee share model, because going into this, I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a certain perception of what that means. But actually, I feel like Karen in particular did a good job to dispel many of those myths, not least the idea that fee share models are not all the same. The firms that offer fee sharing are not all the same.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I spoke to Karen a few weeks ago just generally about what was going on at Bexley Beaumont, and she was very keen to get across that they do work as a team, much more so than some of the other firms that offer the fee share model. There's a lot of work that's referred between different departments, even between people in the same area. And so I think that's probably, one of the key differences between Bexley and some of the other firms, is that they do try and keep that kind of collegiate culture.
I'm not going to comment specifically on any of the other firms that offer this model. Of course, it wouldn't be fair, but from what I gather, that collegiate principle that's underpinning a lot of what Bexley Beaumont's doing, I think they're onto a winner with that, because I think a lot of people, their perception of fee share models is such that the need to completely generate all of your own work is something of a barrier. But actually, the way they're working with a team dynamic, it seems that that's removing part of that need for you to bring all of your own work to the table. And that can only be a positive thing as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, I think that's right, because I speak to a lot of people and obviously discuss the fee share model with candidates who are at that kind of senior level and looking for something a bit different. And the main resistance that I get to that is the fact that you have to generate all of your own work. And I think they kind of see it as you're left to your own devices to some extent, and you're not part of a team, you're an individual. So I think it's important to get that across, that that's not always the case. And Karen put it quite well to me. This was in a separate conversation, not on the podcast just now, but because the consultants take home 70% of everything they bill. Even on a bad month, that's still a significant chunk and probably more than most people are getting on a monthly wage at traditional law firms. So, you know, say someone said a good month was to bill 30K, so, and a really bad month would be maybe 10K, you're still taking home 7K. So I think it's that kind of thing that, you know, just puts it into a bit of perspective. And if you know that you're getting a certain proportion of your work referred from other people as well, I think it's like they say, you just need to back yourself. I think it takes a certain kind of person to do it and do it successfully. But, you know, if you back yourself and, you know, like they say, what's the worst that can happen? If it doesn't work out, you can move back into a traditional model.
And actually, there may not have been before now a better time to do just that and back yourself, because a lot of the traditional reasons why people stay at the traditional firms, that safety net almost that we touched on, those reasons are not as strong as they've, rather they're not as strong as they've historically been. This idea that you stay there because you get regular pay at the end of every month. Well, as we touched on, you know, firms have been losing staff and contracting in size. So yeah, I would kind of say that there's never been a better time to back yourself.
I mean, if anything, Bexy Beaumont's done the exact opposite of that. All they've done is grow in size, and as far as I'm aware, they've retained everybody so far. And they were set up in such a way that even though the pandemic hit, they were set up to work remotely from the off. They had this idea that it would be a very collegiate team culture anyway. So that was all kind of part of the fabric of the firm. So COVID didn't really affect that. And I think that's probably why they've been so successful.
I really liked that in Rebecca, we finally had somebody that has gone down the inverted commas traditional route. Because actually, yeah. I fear that I may have given the impression up till now that I am against the traditional route. And actually, it's not that. It's more that I'm keen for people to understand that there are multiple different avenues into the profession. But it was really nice just to get the input and opinions of someone that has gone down that route. Particularly, I liked the point she made about some of her colleagues' reaction when she decided to make the move away from the international firm and the comfort of the dedicated BD professional in the team and PSL lawyer. that tickled me a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think a lot of people have that benefit either.
No.
But yeah, no, it was nice. I mean, there are people that go down the traditional route, but even Rebecca admitted that amongst her peer group at university, it wasn't the be all and end all. And you know, she recognised that there were multiple different ways to get to the same end goal. So, yeah.
I feel like we made some good headway around the discussion of whether women can have it all or not today.
And yeah.
I think now, as I said earlier, that there's probably not much more that I can add above and beyond what Karen in particular had to say on the subject.
Yeah, I think Karen articulated it really well. And it's societal changes that need to be made. But I mean, she's breaking the mold. Her and Anna have set up a firm, two females. So things are moving in the right direction. It's just, I think, to pick up the pace a little bit.
Absolutely. So thank you as ever for joining us. Please tune in next week. A reminder, as I do every single week, that you can subscribe in all of the usual places, whichever podcast app you choose, whether that be Apple, Spotify, Overcast, so on and so forth. And if you liked what you heard today, please go out of your way to give us a review or a like. We would really be grateful for that. And of course, I'm going to mention once more, Refreshing Chats with Family Lawyers. It's the first series that we recorded of Refreshing Chats, and there are 10 episodes available for you to go back and listen to whenever you get a chance.